This week's episode of Emerging Tech Horizons is brought to you by Raytheon, a company of forward thinkers with more than 55,000 employees around the globe and products in 58 customer countries. Raytheon has established itself as a trusted partner. From launch to impact, we give our customers a decisive advantage. Customer-driven, technology-powered, Raytheon, revolutionizing defense capabilities.
Hello, and welcome to the Emerging Tech Horizons podcast. I'm Mark Lewis, the Executive Director of NDIA's Emerging Technologies Institute, and today's podcast is going to focus on the 5G network. My guest to help explore this is Dr. Nick Maynard, who is the co-founder and CEO of US Ignite. I'll tell you a little bit about Nick. He's responsible for leading the organization and its mission to accelerate the smart community movement and to strengthen public-private partnership programs to drive smarter community development at advanced key network and sensor-based technologies. So in his previous role as Chief Operating Officer, COO, Maynard was instrumental in building out US Ignite's Smart Community Program and establishing something called the Smart Basis Program. He wrote a smart transportation white paper that was incorporated into the Biden infrastructure plan. It's now a $500 million DOT Smart Cities Program that's funded through the bipartisan infrastructure law. Prior to coming to US Ignite, Nick was a program director at the National Science Foundation. There he launched a National Advanced Wireless Research Portfolio. Was also the assistant director at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, where he managed federal IT R&D, launching more than $1 billion in new programs. And that included a photonics foundry, as well as the president's Connect Home program to bring broadband to underserved students. And before that, Nick was a member of the National Broadband Task Force at the FCC, where he created a public-private partnership to offer technology training to small businesses in low-income communities. I should mention, Nick also spent about 10 years in the telecom industry, consulting with leading global carriers and vendors on next-generation networks and services. He received his BA and MA from the University of Chicago and a PhD in public policy from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So clearly someone who's very well positioned to understand government, industry, future needs for advanced communication technologies. So please join me in welcoming Nick to today's podcast. Nick, let me dive in. So I've gone through your biography, but tell us a little bit, how did you come to your current role?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually, when I was over at OSTP, we actually launched US Ignite 10 years ago. Our mission was really focused on helping underserved communities around the country with their broadband challenges. I think we never would have dreamed today that there would be $40 billion flowing through the federal government to all these communities and states and counties. It was terrific to see. But back then, what we were trying to do is help these cities understand what broadband technology, 5G technology could do for them, both on the economic development side and new services and programs within their communities. So we have 50 cities that we work with across the country. These are communities big and small. We have one, Independence, Oregon, which is our smallest, 10,000 people. We've just added Dallas, Texas, and other large, multi-million dollar communities around the country. But we're always focused on the low-income areas of those communities, or these rural or low-income regions across the country. A lot of times they're the ones that need the most help in understanding these technologies, understanding how they can leverage them, partnering with industry, partnering with the federal government, academic partners, and others. So that's really what drove the mission. And we saw a gap in the sort of ecosystem, if you will, 10 years ago when we launched.
Perfect. So, I'm also curious how if you found the experience at OSTP was helpful in the next phases in your career. And I ask that a little bit of bias. I spent 7.5 years at IDA. We were supporting OSTP. So I'm curious how that impacted your career.
Yeah, it had a huge impact. I think OSTP has a terrific seat at the table. There's a lot of great policymaking that goes on internally, and then it's working across the White House, across all these different federal agencies. So I work a lot with National Science Foundation, DOD, DHS, Energy, Commerce Department, others, you know, understanding about their broadband challenge, their broadband programs, but then also there are R&D, related R&D programs, and then commercialization programs as well. So once you get these technologies in a lab, how do you get them into a real world environment? How do you get them commercialized and scaled up? And so a lot of our mission now at US Ignite gets folded into that around the broadband strategy, the economic development strategy, but then how do we really work with these communities so that they're in the driver's seat, they can really identify the best technologies to meet their needs. And a lot of times they're just, like I said earlier, overwhelmed. Like they have a lot of folks knocking on their door, or there's a lot of terrific federal programs out there, and they're just, it's a challenge for them to determine which one's the best fit for them, to apply for that. And then once they do get that funding, how do they actually execute to be successful?
Right. No, that's actually something we hear often here at NDIA. Companies that want to work with the department, but they're not even sure which door they walk through, who do they talk to, which program that they apply to. It sounds like you help a lot with that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I'll give two examples. You mentioned the SMART grant, which is over at Department of Transportation. So we spent a lot of time. It was a multi-year effort of US Ignite doing outreach on the Hill, into the administration, into the Department of Transportation, just encouraging folks to understand how the Smart Transportation Program could be so valuable to the overall infrastructure package that as it made its way through the Hill. Now we have a wide range of communities that are applying to that program this year. Maybe 15 or 20 of our cities applied for that. We provide feedback, suggestions, partnership, letters of support. And then we had about 12 of them selected this year. So we're now working with them on that planning grant that they got, $2 million each, to then say, all right, well, you've got this money. How do we actually start to put that detailed plan together so you can apply for the next phase of funding? We've also got Department of Defense programs that we work with at Marine Corps Air Station Miramar, Fort Carson, and then Fort Benning. And each one is, we're combining 5G networks with smart city sensors and a wide range of pilots. So in some of those instances, we're working with, large companies, certainly like Raytheon or Verizon. But we're also working with local startups or other startups from around the country, making sure they have an opportunity to pilot their technologies. So we've had drone technologies and sensor deployments and autonomous vehicle pilot and a wide range of startups come and participate, leveraging that foundation of the 5G network as a starting point for that effort.
Very good. So actually, could we take a step back and tell our listeners, give them a quick overview of what 5G and future G, what are they? Because, obviously people know it's on their phone and it's better than 4G, but I suspect many of our listeners aren't quite clear on what 5G is. So could you get us up to speed on that?
Yeah, it's a very challenging concept. We spent a lot of time on the Hill, of course. Folks who've just started on the Hill, they end up having 5G or telecommunications as part of their portfolio. And it's a challenging process to understand. I think, like you said, they've got a lot of advertisements, other things, or industry excitement about 5G. Yeah. So I was just going to mention, like, we have a 5G program that we manage. And in each one of those test sites that we have focuses on a different sort of 5G challenge and use case. And that's kind of an easy way to think about kind of the evolving use cases and how the technology is being deployed currently and then will continue to evolve. So we've actually, the program with National Science Foundation is $100 million over 5 years. Half the funding is federal, and then half is industry consortium. So we're working with folks like AT&T and Verizon, but also chip manufacturers like Intel or equipment manufacturers like Ericsson and Nokia. So the whole ecosystem is brought together to work with us. And then we've selected four sites around the country. We've got an urban location in New York City, where they're focused on millimeter wave communications, a connected vehicle, and other use cases. We have a drone communications 5G testbed down in Raleigh-Durham with NC State. And then we have what's called Open RAN and a massive MIMO testbed out in Salt Lake City, also the University of Utah. And we can talk more about Open RAN and sort of that approach and the funding that DoD and Department of Commerce have gotten over the last couple of years. And then we just announced a rural testbed as well. So how do you leverage 5G to support reliable broadband in underserved rural communities? And then also, how do you leverage that 5G network for precision agriculture? So
Nick, I want to go give our listeners a quick overview of what 5G and future G are. And it's not just faster internet. It's more data, lower latency, which enables so many more capabilities. Could you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. And I think, you know, each service provider, each carrier is taking a slightly different approach to 5G and beyond. But, you know, they start with that 4G network. They're adding on additional spectrum bands. They're adding on additional infrastructure around your community. And just like you said, it allows them not only to provide higher speeds so that you can watch this YouTube video faster and in higher definition, but it also lowers the latency so that if you have something that is mission critical, like you've got a connected vehicle, right? Or you've got someone's pacemaker or some other smart city device, you know, getting that low latency and throughput is vitally important. The other piece that it does is it increases the number of devices that the network can support dramatically. So that as we go from one person, one phone to one person with 10 devices or 20 devices, or, you know, the community deploying tens or hundreds or thousands of devices, that the network doesn't get overwhelmed, doesn't bog down. And so what we've seen is a lot of communities, you know, begin to identify whether it's a transportation use case or public safety or energy, what do they want to focus on, leveraging that 5G network, and then working with their industry partners, their local community stakeholders, to then begin to take advantage of that network. So I think, you know, each community, each carrier, right, like I was saying, it has a slightly different approach. There's a tremendous amount of activity going on across the country, right, as these 5G networks get deployed and then upgraded and expanded. And then at the same time, you've also got a wide range of community network, you know, wireless deployments as well, you know, that complement 5G. So maybe there's a rural community or a low-income area, or maybe the community, or maybe it's a private network for an office park or, you know, an enterprise. There's a wide range of wireless networks that are being deployed at those different locations currently.
So, Zenny, you mentioned a smart base approach. How does that relate to smart cities?
That's a great question. So what I would say is that we're trying to leverage these industry investments in 5G networks or these community level networks and then deploy sensors on top of them and give the installation a real-time data dashboard around their energy challenges or public safety or transportation. So I will mention we're doing a project that out of Fort Carson. You know, as you can imagine, they have a lot of challenges around snowfall or, you know, snowstorms or hailstorms. And then it transitions over to, you know, wildfire season. And right now they're just, they've got a phone tree and they're calling each other. They're, you know, looking out the window at 4 a.m. to decide, you know, should we close the installation down or not? And so what we've done is pulled data together from neighboring communities, sensors that we've deployed, industry data, and we're combining all of that into a real-time decision analytic tool that the installation can use at 4 a.m. or the neighboring community, Colorado Springs, can leverage as well. So that's a great use of wireless networks and sensors.
So you've given us some great civilian applications. What does it mean for defense missions and national security writ large?
So what I would say is that we are just at the beginning of the early stages of testing and evaluating these, you know, 5G use cases for the Defense Department. I think that you know, there are a lot of challenges that we're hoping to address, right? There needs to be a coordinated effort to ensure that, you know, in addition to our great partners at Nokia and Ericsson, Samsung, and other, you know, vendors that are, whether in Europe or Asia, that we also have U.S. vendors, big and small, that can help support DoD's mission and the civilian mission. And so that's, I was mentioning a little bit earlier, Open RAN, you know, which is, again, trying to, you know, the Department of Commerce just got $1.5 billion in the last appropriations bill to support Open RAN. And not to get too far into the weeds there, but you know, the easiest way to think about it is leveraging cloud infrastructure for these wireless networks, and also leveraging open source software and low cost hardware, so that you're not relying on just one vendor for your entire network. And so, I think, you know, what DoD needs, what the United States more broadly needs, is its own wireless ecosystem, where you have vendors that are able to provide equipment and services to the AT&Ts of the country, but then also DoD and the other mission agencies. And we're certainly not there yet, but our hope is with this investment that DoD is making, National Science Foundation, Commerce Department, others, that if there's a coordinated approach there, that that we will have that wireless ecosystem in time for that next G that you were mentioning earlier.
So that leads to, you know, you've been on both sides of this now. You've been in government now, and you've helped set the national policy. Your current organization, U.S. Ignite, gives you a different perspective. So I'm curious, from a federal policy standpoint, what does industry need that maybe it isn't getting right now?
I think that there are, what we need is a national strategy around filling in these gaps for 5G and support, just like I said, supporting companies big and small, providing them with the R&D dollars they need, but then also the commercialization support they need. It's not enough to just have a research project. There's multiple steps in commercializing in the 5G space, right? It takes multiple years to get into a lab at AT&T or any carrier. How do you work with these startups or smaller firms to provide them the support they need, whether it's at an NSF test bed or a DoD test bed or one of these other that stretch across the country. So what US Ignite is trying to do as a nonprofit is bring all these different folks that typically are competing against each other every day, whether it's AT&T and Verizon or Intel and Qualcomm, bring all those folks together under one roof, provide one strategy, one direction, and then coordinate with those federal agencies so that we have a clear strategy to address this important challenge.
Of course, I don't know of that many examples where an organization like NSF is working with the DoD, except maybe the basic research level. And yet here it's, do we have enough coordination between these organizations, these agencies?
Well, I think that they are, you know, I think that there's definitely coordination between agency to agency, between DoD or NSF. I think what would be helpful is if there was, not just agency to agency, but across all those different agencies, one single strategy. Here's what we're gonna, here's our goal for the next 5 years in 5G and beyond. Here's how each role, this is NSF's role and DoD's role and DHS's and the rest of them. Here's how industry will be playing its vital part, right? And then put together what is the outcome that we are hoping to achieve here. Of, we're never going to recreate our own Huawei, right, with $100 billion in revenue, but we don't need to get there. We need entities that are, or vendors that are at large enough scale to meet the needs of AT&T and DoD and provide them with equipment and services necessary over that long term. We aren't quite there yet, but I think there are bits and pieces that are starting to coalesce. And that's certainly going to be our focus in the coming years of making sure to fill in those gaps.
And one of the things that, you know, I like to point out that the DoD can create these test beds, like the 5G test beds, as kind of a microcosm, and then prove out the technology and maybe roll it out to commercial applications.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That there are, I guess what I would say is there are commercial applications that we can adapt to, DoD installations, and then there are, just the opposite, like you were saying, things that work well on a DoD installation could also be transitioned to private networks other locations or low income or rural communities around the country. Those are the folks that are going to need the most help. And even though you've got all these federal dollars in the infrastructure bill for broadband or smart city technologies or regional innovation, there's still gaps in the capabilities of these communities to take these technologies and apply them. So having DoD or the other agencies fund the programs are important, but then also building out these pilots and giving communities a clear sense of what the benefit could be for them is absolutely going to be essential.
So something as we're wrapping up, I'm wondering if you could tell us, are there other projects that you're working on that are relevant to DoD or the Defense Industrial Base that our listeners might want to hear about?
Yeah, well, I would just mention, we have another program out at Miramar. Like I say, we are working closely with Verizon and the 5G network that they deployed onto that installation. It was one of the first installations to get 5G. And then we were, just a few weeks ago, we were out there. It was Saturday morning, and they were doing a test of shutting down the power to the entire installation to test and evaluate how the how to get that power capacity back up quickly. And so there are generators and solar cells and EV chargers around the base, and there are sensors connected to each of those over that network. And so now there's a nice and clear dashboard on a tablet that, you know, installation leadership can see. So if there is, a power outage or, you know, a wildfire or some other man-made disaster, then they have a very clear pathway for getting those distributed energy assets spun up again quickly.
Very good. Excellent. Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. I've certainly learned a lot about 5G, and I just want to thank you for everything that you do at US Ignite. You're obviously filling a really important, very valuable service, filling an important need. And especially if the US, you know, first to leverage 5G, 5G capabilities, and then future G capabilities, particularly on behalf of national defense, but for the community as a whole. So thank you so much for joining us and for your insights.
Yeah, thank you so much for the time today. It's great to meet you. Really appreciate the time.
Great. Thanks a lot.